The quiet intensity of Ari's voice caused a chill to ripple up my spine. Did he know what I was planning, or was he guessing? My intentions had always been to get the antidote and run to Citya. Run away, run away, run away. Ari had been right about that, but running south would require me to be in top physical condition and to have the ability to defend myself from guards. However, I had been evading one important detail. Valak. He would follow me to Citya, and crossing the border wouldn't make me safe from him. Even Iris's magic couldn't protect me. He would consider my recapture or my death a personal responsibility. And that was what I'd been so afraid to face, what I'd been dancing around. I'd been concentrating on training so I wouldn't have to deal with the dilemma I feared I wasn't smart enough to solve. I had to enhance my strategy, to include not only obtaining the antidote, but dealing with Valak without killing him. I doubted Ari had the solution.
You might beat Valak with these blows, Jenko puffed while blocking Marin's bow. He'll laugh himself silly at how pathetically weak they are, giving you the perfect opening.
Marin remained silent, but increased the pace of her attack. Jenko backed off. Jenko's words stirred in my mind. An odd little long-shot plan began to take shape. Ari, can you teach me how to pick locks? He considered my words in silence. Finally, he said, Jenko could.
Jenko?
Ari smiled. He seems harmless and happy-go-lucky, but as a boy, he got into all kinds of mischief until he was trapped in a tight spot. Then he was given the choice of either joining the military or going to jail. Now he's a captain. His biggest advantage is that no one thinks he is serious, and that's exactly what he wants. I'll try and remember that the next time he's cracking jokes and my ribs. I watched Marin beat Jenko a second time.
Best 3 out of 5, my lady cannot deny, Jenko called tirelessly.
Marin shrugged. If your ego can handle it, she replied, swiping at his feet with her bow. He jumped, avoiding her attack with an athletic grace, and lunged. The rhythmic crack of wood striking wood filled our practice room. Ari stood, assumed a defensive stance, and somehow I found the energy to face him. After the workout, the four of us were resting on the bench when Valak arrived. Marin shot to her feet, as if she thought being found sitting idle was a crime, but the rest of us kept our relaxed positions. I found it fascinating to watch the small changes in Marin's behavior whenever Valak was around. Her rough edge softened, she smiled more and tried to engage him in conversation or a match. Most of the time he would review fighting tactics with her, or conduct a practice, and she would preen like an alley cat attracting the biggest Tom. But this time he wanted to talk to me, alone. The others left the room. Marin shot me a dark look with the force of one of her bow strikes. I would pay for this tomorrow, I thought. Valak paced. With an uneasy feeling, I hoped that he wasn't searching for a rock to throw. What's wrong? I asked him. Is it about tonight? Excitement over exposing Marge soured to nervousness when I thought of the risk I'd be taking. The idea that this might be another waste of time surfaced. Damn Rayad's ghost. He was making me doubt everything. The leak impacted my life. Someone had tipped off those goons at the fire festival, and Iris had known I was in the forest. Marge needed to be plugged.
No, we're all set for tonight, Valak said.
This is about the commander. He paused. What about him?
Has he been meeting with anyone strange this week?
Strange?
Someone you don't know or an advisor from another military district?
Not that I've seen.
Why?
Valak paused again. I could see his mental wheels turning as he considered whether or not to trust me.
Commander Ambrose has agreed to admit a Sishan delegation.
That's bad? I asked, confused.
He hates Southerners. They've requested a meeting with him every year since the takeover, and for the last 15 years the commander has replied with a single word, no. Now they're due to arrive in a week.
Valak's pacing increased. Ever since you became the food taster and that Criollo showed up, the commander has been acting different. I couldn't put my finger on it before, it was just a nagging feeling, but now I have 2 particular incidents.
The change in his successor and now the southern delegation?
Exactly. I had no response,
My experience with the commander had been the complete opposite of what I had expected from a military dictator. He considered other opinions, was firm, decisive, and fair. His power was obvious. Every command was instantaneously obeyed. He lived the Spartan life that he endorsed. There was no fear in his advisors and high-ranking officers, just an unflappable loyalty and immense respect. The only horror story since the takeover that I'd heard was about Rand's mother. Of course, the assassinations before were infamous. Valak stopped and took a deep breath. I've misdirected some Criollo to our suite. I want you to eat a piece whenever he does. But you're not to tell anyone, not even the commander. That's an order. Yes, sir, I replied automatically, but my mind reeled over his calling the suite ours. Did I hear that right? I wondered. Keep your meeting with Marge tonight. I'll be there. Should I tell Marge's contact about the southern delegation? No. Use the change of the commander's successor. It's already floating around as a rumor, so you'll just confirm it. Valak strode from the room. In case someone would discover our training room, I hid the practice weapons, removed all visible traces of our presence, and locked the door. On my way to the baths, my thoughts dwelled on the meeting tonight. Distracted, I walked by an open doorway, an oddity. In this section of the castle, most of the doors led to storerooms and were kept locked. Movement blurred to my left. Hands grabbed my arm and yanked me inside. The door slammed shut. Complete darkness descended. I was flung face first against a stone wall. The air in my lungs whooshed out from the impact. I turned. My back to the wall, I gasped for breath.
"Stay put," a male voice growled.
I aimed a front kick toward the voice but met air. Laughter taunted. A candle was uncovered. The weak yellow glow reflected off a long silver blade. Terrified, I traced the knife to the hand, then along the arm, and up to the face. Nix. Chapter 21.
Why?
Nix placed the candle among the cobwebs lacing the tabletop.
Why am I always the smartest one?
He stepped closer. I kicked again, but he blocked it with ease.
Why haven't my attempts to discourage you worked?
In the flicker of the candlelight, he moved, the edge of his knife pressed against my throat.
Maybe I need to be more obvious?
The smells of boiled cabbage and body odor penetrated my nose. Keeping my body still, I asked in the most neutral and unfrightened voice I could manage, "What's your problem?"
"My problem is that no one sees you as a threat. But I'm smarter than Ari, Janko, and Marin. I'm even smarter than Valak, aren't I?"
When I failed to respond, Nix added pressure to the knife.
"Aren't I?"
A thin line of pain burned across my neck. "Yes," I replied. In the air behind Nix, Rayad's ghost coalesced out of the dust motes, sporting a smug smile.
"My boss wants you to stop training. I'm not allowed to kill you."
"Pity." Nix stroked my face with his free hand.
"I'm here to warn you off."
"Parfit? Why would he care?" As I tried to distract him, my mind frantically shuffled through my brief sessions with Ari on knife defense. Damn, I thought. Why hadn't I paid more attention?
"He doesn't care. The only thing dull-witted Parfit cares about is getting promoted. But General Brazil has a keen interest in your new hobby."
Nix thrust his free hand between my legs and leaned his body against mine. For a terrified second, I froze. Panic erased all techniques of self-defense from my mind. A soft buzzing began to grow inside my head, but I stifled it, pushed it away, and it transformed into a simple musical scale of notes. Calm flowed. The necessary defense moves appeared before my eyes. I moaned and rocked my hips, widening my stance. Nix smiled with delight.
"You're just the whore I thought you'd be. Now remember, you're to be punished."
His upper thigh replaced his hand. He began to tug at my belt.
I rubbed my knee between his legs, then rammed it straight up into his groin. Grunting, Nix doubled over. I grabbed his blade with both hands to prevent it from biting farther into my throat. Ari's practical voice, "Better to cut your hands than your neck," echoed in my head, even as I winced at the sharp pain. Focusing on the knife, I pushed the weapon from me. Nix stumbled back. "Bitch," he snarled, and pulled his arm back to swing the knife. As the blade swept toward me, I stepped in close to his body, so when I turned, my right shoulder brushed his chest. Using the edges of my opened hands, I struck his upper and lower arm. The combined force of my strike and his swing made Nix's arm go limp. The weapon clattered to the floor. Grabbing his arm, I twisted it until the heel of his hand pointed toward the ceiling. Then I pivoted, placing my right shoulder under his elbow. With all my might, I yanked his hand down. I heard a loud crack, followed by a scream as Nix's arm broke. Spinning around to face him, I punched him twice in the nose. Blood gushed out. While he was off balance, I kicked his kneecap, breaking it. Nix crumpled to the ground. I danced around him, kicking him in the ribs. My blood hummed and sizzled. His weak attempts to block me only fueled my frenzy. In that state of mind, I might have killed him. Rayad's ghost cheered me on. "That's it, Yelena," he urged. "Kill another man, and it's the noose for sure." Somehow, his words reached the rational part of my mind, and I stopped, breathing hard. Nix was still. I knelt beside him and felt for a pulse. A strong throb met my fingertips. The relief that coursed through me vanished when Nix clutched my elbow. I yelped and punched him in the face. His grip relaxed and I pulled my arm free. Snatching the knife from the floor, I took Jenko's often repeated advice for self-defense. "Hit and get." I ran. But this time fear didn't follow me. I ran with imaginary scarlet wings flowing behind me. Moving fast to ward off the shakes that threatened to overpower me, I reached the baths. They were empty at this time of day, so I hid Nix's knife under one of the towel tables. I checked the extent of my wounds in the mirror. The cut on my neck had stopped bleeding, but two deep gashes on my palms looked serious enough to require the medic's attention. There was also a wild, unrecognizable shine to my eyes, as if I had turned feral. I bared my teeth and thought, "Now who's the rat?" Pondering my next move, I wavered. The commander expected me to taste his dinner, but I couldn't bleed all over his food. My initial surge of energy from the fight with Nix was waning. A wave of dizziness swelled. I headed toward the infirmary, hoping to reach it before I passed out. Medic Mommy gave me a quick appraisal. She pointed to an examining table. I perched on the edge and held my hands out for inspection. "How?" she started. "Broken glass," I said. She nodded, lips pressed tight, and thought, "I'll get my med kit." I stretched out on the bed when she returned with her metal tray full of instruments. A jar of Rand's glue seemed out of place among the medical supplies, like a child's toy surrounded by adult paraphernalia. My hands had started to throb, and I dreaded the medic's ministrations. I turned my head in time to see Valak burst into the infirmary. "Just what I needed," I thought, sighing. This had turned out to be one hell of a bad day. "What happened?" Valak demanded. I glanced at the medic. She took my right hand and began to clean my wound. "Broken glass leaves jagged lacerations. These clean slices are obviously from a knife. I'm required to report it." The medic had reported me to Valak, and he wasn't going to leave without an answer. With resignation, I focused on him, hoping to distract myself from the pain in my hands. "I was attacked." "By who?" His tone sharp. I cut my eyes at the medic, and Valak understood. "Could you excuse us for a minute?" he asked her. She pursed her lips as if considering his request. Her authority overruled Valak's for all medical situations. 5 minutes, she ordered, and walked to her desk on the far side of the infirmary. "Who?" Valak repeated. "Nix, a guard in Parfit's unit. Said he worked for Brazel and warned me to stop training." "I'll kill him." The intensity of Valak's voice shocked and alarmed me. "No, you won't," I said, trying to sound firm. "You'll use him. He's a link to Brazel." His hard blue eyes found mine and held my gaze, probing deep. "Where did he attack you?" A storeroom about 4 or 5 doors up from our training room. He's probably long gone by now. I'll send someone to the barracks.
He won't be there.
Why not? Valak gave me a look that reminded me of the commander. His eyebrows were raised in an effort to suppress his emotions, inviting me to continue. If he's not in the storeroom, he won't have gotten far. You might want to send a couple of men.
I see.
Valak paused.
So your training has been progressing to your satisfaction?
Better than expected.
Valak left the infirmary.
Medic Mommy, the stoolie, returned to my side. Next time, I thought bitterly, I'll heal myself and avoid being betrayed by the medic. I still had a jar of Rand's glue in my backpack. How hard could it be to seal a couple of cuts?
I chewed on my lower lip while she finished cleaning and sealing my cuts.
Wrapping bandages tightly around my hands, she gave me instructions that would allow them to heal. No immersion in water for a day, no lifting or writing for a week. And that meant no training for a while, I thought.
Valak's men entered. They dumped Nix onto another examining table. The medic shot me a quizzical expression.
Then she bustled over to Nix's groaning form, giving me the perfect opportunity to leave.
I hurried to the commander's office, but Valak had beaten me there. He closed the door behind him as he joined me in the throne room.
"I've taken care of dinner," he said, guiding me back through the maze of desks. It was early evening, and only a handful of advisors were working.
"Find Marge and cancel tonight's meeting, then go back to our suite and get some rest," he said.
"Cancel? What for? It would look suspicious. I'll wear gloves to cover the bandages. It's cold enough at night, nobody will notice."
When he didn't reply, I added, "I'm fine."
He smiled. "You should take a look at yourself in a mirror." He hesitated, his face creasing in indecision.
"All right, we'll proceed as planned."
We stopped at the door to Valak's office.
"I have some work to finish. Rest, and don't worry. I'll be close by tonight."
He inserted his key.
"Valak?"
"Yes?"
"What will happen to Nix?"
"We'll patch him up, threaten him with years in the dungeon if he doesn't cooperate. And when he's done helping us, I'll reassign him to MD1.
Good enough?
Or should I kill him?"
Military District 1 was the coldest, bleakest district in Ixia. The possibility of Nix falling prey to a snowcat brought a wicked grin to my face.
"No. Reassignment's good. If I had wanted him dead, I would have done it myself."
Valak straightened his spine, snapping me a look. A combination of surprise, amusement, and wariness over my comment flashed across his face before he reined in his emotions and was once again my stone-faced Valak. I smiled my best Jenko impression and headed down the hall. Resting would have to wait since I had a number of errands to run before the evening's meeting. First, I needed a pair of gloves and a cloak. As the cooling season dwindled toward the cold season, the nights had turned sharp and brisk, coating everything in a blanket of ice so that the blades of grass sparkled like diamonds when touched by the morning sun. Thanking fate that Delana was still in her sewing room, I chatted with her about the latest gossip before I made my request.
"My goodness," she said, sounding like a worried matron. "You don't have any clothes for the cold."
She bustled about her stacks of uniforms. Her soft, honey-colored ringlets bounced with each movement.
"Why didn't you come to me sooner?" she admonished.
I laughed. "I haven't needed them till now. Delana, do you mother everyone in the castle?" She stopped piling clothes to look at me.
"No, dear, just the ones that need it."
"Thanks," I said in a tone of affectionate sarcasm. By the time she was through outfitting me for the cold season, I was inundated with a heap of clothing. With all of the flannel undergarments, wool socks, and heavy boots, I probably could survive on the pack ice for weeks. I stashed the pile into a corner of the room and asked Delana to have someone deliver them to Valak's suite.
"Still there?" she asked with a grin.
"For now. But I think when things settle down, I'll be back in my old room."
"When?" I thought sourly. It was more like if. I selected a heavy black cloak from the stack, tucked black wool gloves into its deep pockets, and then draped it over my arm. The cloak had 2 hand-sized red diamonds stitched on the left breast,
and an oversized hood whose function was more to keep the rain off my face than to keep my head warm.
I think you'll be there a long time, Delana said.
Why?
I believe Valak's sweet on you. I've never seen him take such an interest in a food taster before. He usually trains them and leaves them alone. If there was any potential for trouble, he would assign one of his sneaks to spy on the taster. But he wouldn't bother with him personally, let alone live with one.
Her face had the avid glow of a gossip at full steam.
You're crazy. Deluded.
In fact, he's never taken an interest in a woman before.
I was beginning to suspect he might prefer one of his male sneaks, but now...
She paused dramatically.
Now we have the lovely, intelligent Yelena to get Valak's cold heart pumping.
You really should get out of your sewing room more. You need fresh air and a dose of reality, I said, knowing better than to believe a word Delana said, but unable to control the silly little grin on my face.
Her sweet, melodious laughter followed me into the hallway.
You know I'm right, she called.
The only reason Valak was interested in me, I thought as I walked through the dim corridors, was because I was a puzzle for him to solve. Once he thought he had all the answers about the southern magician and Brazil, I'd be sent back to my room in the servant's wing. I couldn't let myself believe anything else. It was one thing for me to have a harmless infatuation that wouldn't have any influence on my plans. It wouldn't. Absolutely not. To think he felt the same toward me would be disastrous.
So I tried to convince myself that Delana, although a sweetheart, was a victim of her own overactive imagination and was mistaken. I tried very hard. I tried all the way to the kitchen. I tried when I saw Rand lurching around his ovens, reminding myself that Valak was ruthless, murdering dozens of people. The king's blood still adorned Valak's knife. Valak was deadly, moody, and exasperating. But for some reason, I couldn't get that silly grin to go away no matter how hard I tried. Draping my cloak over a stool, I helped myself to a late dinner. Rand finished spinning his pigs and pulled up a stool beside me. My mouth watered at the smell of roasting pork.
What's the occasion? I asked. Pork roast was a rare meal, requiring an entire day to cook and served only at special times.
General's coming to visit this week. All my special dishes have been requested. I've also been ordered to prepare a feast for next week.
A feast?
We haven't had one of those since...
He shook his head, pursing his lips.
Actually, we've never had one with the commander in charge.
Rand sighed.
I won't have any time to experiment.
Would you have time to look at these? Pulling a handful of the mystery beans out of my pocket, I handed them to Rand. I had been waiting for the perfect opportunity to show them to him. I found them in an old storeroom, and I thought maybe they were your coffee beans. He immediately ducked his head and took a deep sniff of the beans.
No, unfortunately not. I don't know what these are. Coffee beans are smooth and have a rounder shape. These are oval, see? And bumpy.
Rand spread them out on the table and picked one up. He bit into it. Chewing, he cringed at the bitter taste.
I've never seen or tasted anything like this. Where did you find them?
Somewhere on the castle's lower level.
Oh well, I thought. It had been worth a try.
My disappointment pressed on my shoulders. I had hoped to solve this puzzle for Commander Ambrose, but it looked as though I had hit another dead end. Rand must have sensed my frustration.
Important? He inquired.
I nodded.
Tell you what, he said. Leave these here, and after the feast I'll work on them for you.
Work?
I'll try grinding, cooking, and boiling the beans. Ingredients can change their flavor and texture when you add heat, and these might turn into something I recognize. All right?
I don't want to inconvenience you.
Nonsense. I like a challenge. Besides, after the feast, it'll be back to my daily routine anyhow, and this will give me a project to look forward to.
He funneled the beans into a jar and placed it high on a shelf full of other strange edibles similarly encased in their own glass jars. We discussed menu options for the feast until Rand needed to turn his pigs again. A quarter turn every hour, he said, reminding me that my time to meet Marge was fast approaching. A small pang of nervousness touched my stomach as I bade Rand goodnight. I stopped by the baths, intending to retrieve Nix's knife, but there were too many people there. Maybe being unarmed would be for the best, I told myself as I tried to calm the butterflies in my stomach. Maybe they would search me. If they found a weapon, I might be in more trouble. Marge wore her usual expression of distaste when I met her just past the south gate of the castle complex. We exchanged insults by way of greeting and continued the walk into Castletown in silence. I hoped Valak was close behind, but I knew better than to glance over my shoulder and make Marge wary. Stars decorated the night sky, and the full face of the moon shone brightly, casting shadows. The road to town was grooved with ruts from wagon wheels and worn smooth by the passage of many boots. I took a deep breath of the cool night air and felt a sense of renewal as the heavy scent of earth and dried leaves cleansed my lungs. At the outskirts of town, I saw neat rows of four-story wooden buildings. I was struck by their symmetry. I had grown so accustomed to the wild, asymmetrical style of the castle, with its windows of every geometric shape, that the ordinary plainness of the town seemed bizarre. Even the placement of businesses among the residences had been planned in a logical manner. The few townspeople that I spotted on the street walked with a purpose. Nobody hung about, or talked, or looked as if they were out for a casual stroll. Nobody, except the town's guards. Soldiers who had once played a major part in the takeover had been reassigned as policemen for the towns throughout the territory of Ixia. Enforcing curfew and the dress code, they dealt justice in accordance with the code of behavior by checking papers, arranging transfers, and making arrests. Every visitor to each town was required to report to the main station to complete the proper paperwork before seeking lodging. Our meeting had been carefully scheduled to give us time to return to the castle before our presence on the street would be viewed with suspicion. The pairs of soldiers stationed on the streets followed us with their gazes. I felt my skin prickle under their scrutiny, and I had myself half convinced that they would swoop down on us at any moment. In the middle of a street free from guards, Marge came to a stop at a house indistinguishable from its neighbors. She knocked twice on the door. After a pause, the door swung inward, and a tall, red-haired woman in an innkeeper's uniform poked her head out. Glancing at Marge, she nodded in recognition. She had a sharp, sloping nose which guided the movements of her head as she pointed her face at me. Her dark eyes rested upon me with an intensity that made me want to fidget. A bead of sweat trickled down my spine. Finally, she pulled her nose away to look down the street, sniffing for a trap, I guessed. Apparently satisfied, she opened the door wider and let us in. Still no one spoke as we proceeded up three flights of steps. The top floor of the house was ablaze with light, and I squinted in the harsh brightness. A profusion of candles ringed the room on multiple levels, heating the air with the smoky scent of apples. I glanced at the window. With the amount of light in the room, I was sure it would spill out into the street, but black curtains covered the glass and pooled on the floor. Bookshelves, a desk, and a scattering of comfortable armchairs led me to believe that the room was used as a study. The woman who had let us in sat behind the desk. Odd metal statues that resembled lanterns with rings around the top graced each side. Other strange and gleaming objects had been artfully arranged on shelves and tabletops. Some even hung from the ceiling. These spun in the air, stirred by our passage. The sharp-nosed woman didn't offer us a seat, so Marge and I stood before her desk. Most of her ruby hair was confined in a bun, but small, curly wisps had sprung free. "The food taster," she said with a satisfied curl to her lip. "I knew it was only a matter of time before I had you in my employ." "Who are you?" My bluntness informed her that I wouldn't tolerate games.
"You can call me Captain Star."
I looked at her innkeeper's uniform.
"I'm not part of Ambrose's military. I have my own. Has Marge explained how I work?"
"Yes."
"Good. This will be a simple exchange. This isn't a social call. I don't want gossip or hearsay. And don't inquire about my business or about me. All you need to know is my name. Agreed?"
"Agreed."
Since I wanted to gain her trust, I wasn't about to cause any trouble, at least not yet.
Good. What do you got?
With her nose leading the way, she leaned forward in her chair. The commander has changed his successor, I said. Star's body stilled as she absorbed this tidbit. I glanced at Marge, who looked shocked and annoyed that I had such interesting news.
How do you know?
Star asked. I overheard the commander and Valak talking.
Yes, Valak.
Star tilted her nose at me.
Why are you living in his apartment?
None of your business, I said with a firm tone.
So why should I trust you?
Because Valak would kill me if he knew I was here. You know it as well as I do. How much is my information worth? Star opened a black velvet purse and pulled out one gold coin. She tossed the coin to me like a master would throw a bone to a dog. I snatched it from the air, suppressing a wince. The cuts on my hands started to throb.
You're 15%?
She sent one silver and one copper coin flying at Marge, who knew Star's ways and caught them easily.
Anything else?
Star asked me. Not at this time.
When you have something for me, tell Marge. She'll arrange another meeting.
Dismissed, I followed the silent Marge out of the house and down the street. Just as she guided me into a dark alley, Valak appeared out of the shadows. Before I could wonder why, he pulled me through a doorway and into a small room. I was surprised and confused by his sudden arrival. I had thought he would wait a while before arresting Marge. She had followed me into the room and stood with a sneering grin on her round face. It was the closest expression to pleasure that I had ever seen from her, and the opposite of what I had anticipated when she was caught as the leak. I tilted my head at Valak, hoping to prompt an explanation.
I was right, Valak. She sold the commander out for a gold coin.
Check her pocket, Marge urged.
Actually, Yelena came to me before the meeting. She believed she was going to expose you, Valak said to Marge.
Her gloating grin disappeared.
Why didn't you tell me?
She demanded.
No time.
Marge's not the leak? I asked, still confused.
No, Marge works for me. We've been feeding Star some rather unique information, and hoping to find out who her other clients are. Star's been pestering Marge to get you involved, and I thought it would be a good opportunity to test your loyalty.
A complete understanding of Valak's ill temper snapped into my mind. He had expected me to betray him and the commander. How could he have believed that, I wondered? Didn't he know me at all? Anger, disappointment, and relief warred in my heart. I was unable to propel any words past my throat.
I had hoped to send this rat back to the dungeon where she belongs,
Marge complained to Valak.
Now she'll still be scurrying around, still a threat.
Annoyed, she poked my arm with a meaty finger. I moved. In a heartbeat, I twisted her arm behind her back. She yelped as I raised her hand up high, forcing her to bend forward.
I am not a rat, I said through clenched teeth. I've proved my loyalty. You will get off my back. No more nasty messages in the dust. No more prying into my things. Or the next time, I'll break your arm.
I shoved her hard as I released my grip. She stumbled and landed on the ground in a heap. Pink-faced, she lurched to her feet. As she opened her mouth to protest, Valak stopped her with a glance.
Well said, Yelena. Marge, you're dismissed, Valak said.
Marge's mouth snapped closed as she spun on her heel and left the room.
She's not friendly, I said.
No, that is precisely why I like her. He studied the door for a moment, then said, Yelena, I'm going to show you something you're not going to like, but I think it's important that you know.
Oh, yeah? Like I enjoyed your test of faith? Sarcasm rendered my voice sharp. I warned you that I tested the food taster from time to time.
Before I could reply, he stopped me.
Be quiet and stay close behind me.
We went back out into the alley. Keeping in the shadows, we walked back to Star's house, where Valak guided me into a dark entrance within sight of Star's door.
The person who has been leaking information to Star is due to arrive soon, Valak whispered close to my ear. His lips lightly rubbed my cheek. Shivers rippled down my spine at his touch, distracting me from what he had said. The impact of Valak's words didn't hit me until I saw a lone figure with an uneven gait walking down the street. Chapter 22. I recognized that stride. My heart melted as I watched Rand limp to Star's house, knocking twice. She admitted Rand into her home without a moment's hesitation. The faint thump of the closing door echoed hollowly in my chest. "Another test?" I asked Valak with desperate urgency. "Is he working for you?" But I knew the answer deep in my soul, even before I saw the sad shake of his head. I felt empty, as if every emotion had been wrenched out of me. It was just too much. After Rayad's ghost, Nyx's attack, and Valak's test, I was mentally unable to handle another blow. I just stared at Valak with no thoughts, no feelings, and no desires. Valak motioned for me to follow him. I complied. We circled around to the back of Star's house. Entering the building to the left, we padded up three stories. The interior was dark and empty except for the top floor. One of Valak's men sat cross-legged with his back resting against the wall shared with Star's study. He wrote in a notebook, using a single candle as illumination. Rand's voice could be heard clearly. Using hand signals, Valak communicated with the man. He gave the notebook to Valak and disappeared down the steps. Valak sat in the man's spot and then tapped the floor next to him. I crouched beside him, facing the wall. I had no desire to hear Rand's deceit, but I didn't have the willpower to leave. Valak pointed to an array of small holes in the wood. I peered through. All I could see was the back of a piece of furniture. I guessed that the holes were for listening purposes only. Squatting on the floor, I rested my forehead against the wall and closed my eyes as I eavesdropped on Rand's conversation.
"Generals are coming to town this week. That's nothing new. But the commander ordered a feast, so something's up. Something significant. But I haven't been able to figure out what," Rand said.
"Let me know as soon as possible," Star replied.
Then she paused.
"Maybe Yelena knows what's going on."
My heart lurched when I heard my name. "Run away, run away, run away," my mind screamed, but I only pressed my forehead harder on the wall.
"I doubt it."
She was surprised when I mentioned the feast, so I didn't ask her.
"She might know more later this week. I'll try again."
"Don't bother. I'll ask her myself."
The sleek tone of Star's voice implied that she had concealed this revelation until the time when exposing it would cause maximum damage.
"Yelena?" Rand sputtered. "Working for you? Impossible. That's not her style."
"Are you suggesting she's working for Valak?"
Alarm tightened her voice. Equally upset, I glanced at Valak. He shook his head, waving his hand in a "don't worry" gesture.
"No. She wouldn't." Rand had recovered. "I'm just surprised, but I shouldn't be. She could use the money, and who am I to think any less of her for it?"
"Well, you shouldn't be thinking of her at all. As I see it, she's disposable. The only concern I'll have when she dies is, who's going to replace her, and how quickly can I bribe him?"
"Star, once again you've shown me in the most repulsive way that the sooner I pay off my debt to you, the better. How much credit do I get for tonight's information?"
2 silvers. I'll mark it in my book, but it won't make much difference."
"What do you mean?"
"Haven't you figured it out by now? You'll never pay off your debt. As soon as you get close, you always gamble yourself right down another hole. You're too weak, Rand, too swayed by your own emotions, easily addicted, and lacking in willpower."
"Oh, that's right. You claim to be a magician. Have you read my mind, Captain?" "Captain Star, what a laugh. If you really had magic,
Valak would have taken care of you long ago. I know you're not as smart as you claim. The heavy, uneven tread of footsteps resounded through the wall as Rand started to walk away. I was astounded. I had never heard Rand speak with such harsh sarcasm before, and more than that, if Star was a magician, I could be in serious danger. My mind spun, but it was all too complex to contemplate at this time.
I don't need to read your mind, Star called after him. All I have to do is review your history, Rand. It's all there.
Silence settled. The only noise coming from Star's study was the crinkle of papers being turned. Valak stood, pulling me up with him. His man had returned. Handing him the notebook, Valak descended the steps. I followed Valak through the dark streets of Castletown. We kept to the shadows, avoiding the patrolmen. Once we had escaped the city's limits, Valak relaxed and walked beside me on the main road to the castle. I'm sorry, Valak said. I know Rand was your friend. His use of the past tense jabbed like a knife's point between my ribs. How long have you known? I asked. I have suspected for the last 3 months, but only procured the hard evidence this month. What tipped you off? Rand and his staff helped me with that poison test I gave you. He stayed while I laced the food with poison. I left that goblet of peach juice on my desk to keep it clean. It was a fair test. Blackberry poison was in that cup, but I didn't put it there. Valak paused, letting the information sink in. An interesting property of blackberries is that only when they're prepared in a special solution of grain alcohol and yeast, and cooked with extreme care to the proper temperature, are they poisonous. Most cooks, and certainly not their assistants, don't possess the skills or the knowledge to achieve that result. Valak sounded as if he admired Rand's ability to brew the poison. The full understanding that Rand had tried to poison me almost knocked me off my feet. I stumbled as a surge of nausea boiled in my stomach. Dashing to the side of the road, I vomited into the bushes. Only when my body had ceased its convulsions did I realize Valak was supporting me. One of his arms was wrapped around my waist, while a cold hand pressed against my forehead. Thanks, I said, wiping my chin clean with some leaves. With trembling legs, I let Valak lead me to the castle. If he hadn't continued to support me, I would have curled up on the ground and called it a night. There's more. Do you want to hear it? Valak asked. No. The truth, but as we grew closer to the outer wall of the castle complex, I made an ugly connection. Did Rand set me up at the fire festival? In a way. That's not an answer. The goons that nabbed you waited for you near the baking tent, so I suspected that Rand had told Star you would be there. But then he wouldn't let you out of his sight. It was as if he was protecting you. Remember how upset he was when he couldn't find you? How relieved he was when he spotted you alive and whole? I thought he was drunk, I said. I suspect Rand is an unwilling participant. At the time of the poison test, he hardly knew you, but as your friendship grew, I imagine he finds himself in a difficult situation. He doesn't want to hurt you, but he needs to pay off his gambling debt. Star has an extensive organization, with plenty more thugs to replace the ones I took care of. Thugs who would be willing to break a few bones for their boss. Does that make you feel any better? No. My reaction to Rand's betrayal seemed extreme even to me, but I couldn't switch it off. It wasn't the first time someone had played false with me, and it wasn't going to be the last. Frizzell had deceived me. I had loved him like a father, and been loyal to him. In the end, it took almost a year of enduring his experiments before my feelings dwindled to the point where I could see him as he really was. But I had always known my young devotion to him was one-sided. Since he had never given me any reason to think he cared for me, his actions had been easier to stomach. Rand's friendship, on the other hand, appeared genuine. I had begun to feel as if I had finally made a decent-sized hole in the stone barricade I had built around myself. Big enough for me to slip through and enjoy our time together. Now the wall was crumbling. I felt stones pelting me and burying me deep beneath the rubble. How could I trust anyone again? Anything else you want to tell me? I asked Valak as we stopped a few feet short of the castle's south entrance. Did Ari and Jenko set me up for Nyx's attack? Do you have another test of loyalty for me up your sleeve? Maybe the next time I'll actually fail, a prospect that seems appealing. I pushed away Valak's supporting arm. When you warned me that you would test me from time to time, I thought you meant spiking my food. But it seems there is more than one way to poison a person's heart, and it doesn't even require a meal. Everyone makes choices in life. Some bad, some good. It's called living, and if you want to bow out, then go right ahead. But don't do it halfway. Don't linger in whiner's limbo, Valak said, his voice gruff. I don't know what horrors you faced prior to your arrival in our dungeon. If I had to guess, I would think they were worse than what you have discovered tonight. Perhaps that will put things into perspective. He strode into the castle. I leaned against the cold wall, resting my head on the unyielding surface. Maybe if I stayed here long enough, my heart would turn to stone. Then betrayals, tests of loyalties and poisons would have no effect on me. But the cold eventually drove me inside.
Apply a force on the wrench. Not too much. You need a firm yet gentle touch, Jenko said.
With healing hands still sore, I clumsily placed the tension wrench into the keyhole and applied pressure.
Now use your diamond pick to lift the pin that's trapped by the tension. Lift it until it breaks, he instructed.
Breaks? I asked.
Reaches alignment. When you put a key into a lock, the metal ridges push the pins up so you can turn the cylinder and open the lock. The pins hold the cylinder in place. You'll need to do one pin at a time and continue the pressure.
I slid the pick into the lock past the wrench. I maneuvered the pick, lifting each of the 5 pins. I could feel a tiny vibration in my finger joints as each pin broke with a subtle yet distinct click. When they were all aligned, the cylinder turned and the door unlocked.
Good job! Damn, Yelena, you're a fast learner.
Jenko paused, his brow creased in concern.
You're not going to use this to do something stupid, right? And get us into trouble?
Define stupid, I said. When Jenko's eyes widened, I added, Don't worry, I'm the only one who would get into trouble. He relaxed, and I practiced on another lock. We were in the lower level of the castle where no one would surprise us. It had been 4 days since the night I had learned about Rand. Valak's orders had been to act as if nothing had happened. He wanted to discover the full extent of Star's organization before exposing them. Valak was a true predator, I thought sourly, eyeing his prey before pouncing for the kill. I knew I wasn't ready to play the friend to Rand, so I had been avoiding him, which wasn't hard to do. The castle crawled with generals and their retinues, making every worker in the complex busy, including Rand.
Brazel was another reason I was glad to be out of sight. His black and green soldiers had infected the castle, and keeping away from them was becoming difficult.
Although I didn't mind hiding in Valak's suite. He had stolen a box of Criollo, and I was contented to munch a piece each time I tasted the commander's food. Ari, Jenko, and I had postponed our training sessions for the duration of the general's visit, but I had managed to rope Jenko into teaching me to pick locks. Giving him the gold coin from Star had provided an added incentive. Valak had said I could keep it since working undercover wasn't part of the food taster's job. But the heavy weight of it in my pocket had been a constant reminder of Rand's treachery, so I decided to put it to good use.
This last lock has 10 pins. If you can open this one, you'll be able to handle all the pin tumbler locks or key locks in the castle, except the dungeon bolts. They're complicated, and it's not like we can practice on them.
Jenko's forehead furrowed.
You're not going to need that skill, are you?
I sincerely hope not.
Good.
After several failed attempts, I managed to pop the lock open.
Now you need to practice. The quicker you can spring a lock, the better, Jenko instructed. I would let you borrow my picks, but I never know exactly when I might need them.
He winked, a mischievous glint sparkling in his eyes.
So?
He pulled another set from his pocket.
I used that coin you gave me to buy a set for you.
He handed me a black cloth case. That money was for you.
Oh, there's plenty left, even after I bought you this.
He flourished an ebony-colored wooden rod as long as my hand. It was decorated with a bright silver button, and silver symbols were engraved on the side. "What's that?" I asked.
"Push the button," he said with glee.
I pressed down with my thumb and started when a long, gleaming blade shot out. It was a switchblade. Amazed, I stared at my gifts. "Thank you, Jenko. But why did you buy these for me?"
"Guilt, I suppose."
"Guilt?" Not the answer I had expected.
"I called you a criminal. I was once a criminal, but I've gone past it, and no one has held it against me. Besides, I have a terrible feeling you may need them. General Brazel's soldiers have been swaggering around the barracks, bragging about who's going to take out Rayad's killer. They're quite imaginative, and I had to hold Ari back from challenging the lot a couple of times. 10 against 1 isn't good odds, even for Ari and me."
"I'll stay away from them," I said.
"Good. I'd better get moving. I've drawn the night shift. But first, I'll escort you to your room."
"That's not necessary."
"Ari would kill me if I didn't."
We walked together toward Valak's suite. When we reached the corner before the main doors, Jenko stopped just out of sight of the guards.
"Almost forgot," he said, reaching into his uniform pocket.
He pulled out a sheath for the switchblade.
"It goes around your right thigh. Remember to make a nice big hole in your pants pocket, so when you pull the weapon, it won't get caught in the fabric."
He was about to leave when I stopped him. "Jenko, what are these symbols?" I pointed to the silver markings on the handle of the knife. Jenko smiled.
"They're the old battle symbols used by the king when he sent out messages and orders during war times. It didn't matter if the enemy intercepted them, because they were unintelligible to anyone who didn't know how to decipher them. Some of the soldiers still use them. They work well in military exercises."
"What do they say?"
His grin widened. "Too easy, Yelena. I'm sure you'll figure it out. Eventually."
Always the prankster, Jenko laughed with delight. "Come here," I said, "so I can punch you."
"I'd love to oblige you, my dear."
Jenko dodged beyond my reach.
"But I'm late."
Chapter 23. After hiding Jenko's gifts deep in my uniform pocket, I went into Valak's suite. He was working at his desk, but he looked up as soon as I entered the room, giving me the impression that he had been waiting for me.
"Where have you been?" he asked.
"With Jenko," I said. But I was wary. As long as I arrived at the scheduled times during the day, Valak didn't ask about what I did with my free time.
"Doing what?" Valak demanded, standing with his hands on his hips.
The comical image of a jealous husband popped into my mind. I stifled a smile. "Discussing fighting tactics."
"Oh."
Valak relaxed his stance, but moved his arms awkwardly as if he felt he had overreacted and was trying to cover it up.
"Well, that's all right. But from now on, I need to know where you are at all times, and I suggest you stay in the castle and keep a low profile for a while. General Brazel's guards have set a bounty on your head."
"A bounty?" Fear pulsed through my chest.
"It could be a rumor, or just drunken soldiers talk. But until they leave, I want you protected."
Valak's tone was firm, but then he added,
"I don't want to train another taster."
"I'll be careful."
"No, you'll be paranoid. You'll move in a crowd, keep to well-lit areas, and you'll make certain to have an escort with you whenever you're walking down empty hallways late at night. Understood?"
"Yes, sir."
"Good.
The general's branding meeting is scheduled for tomorrow evening. Each general will bring a bottle of his finest brandy to share as they discuss Ixion business late into the night. You will be needed to taste the commander's drinks."
Valak lifted a box of 8 bottles from the floor. They clinked musically as he set the carton on the table. Pulling out a small drinking glass, he said,
"I want you to sample each brandy once tonight, and at least twice tomorrow, so you know how each tastes clean of poisons."
He handed me the glass. "Each bottle is labeled according to the type of brandy, and which general brings it." I grabbed a decanter at random. It was General Dino's cherry brandy made in MD-8.
Pouring a mouthful, I took a sip and rolled the liquid around my tongue, attempting to commit the taste to memory before swallowing. The strong alcohol burned down my throat, leaving behind a small fire in my chest. My face flushed with the heat.
"I suggest you use the slurp and spit method so you don't get drunk," Valak said.
"Good point." I found another glass for spitting, and then worked my way through the remainder of the bottles. On the day of the meeting, I tasted each brandy twice more in Valak's suite, and then tested myself with a third round. Only when I could pinpoint by taste alone which cordial belonged to which general was I satisfied. That night, I waited for Valak to escort me to the war room. He came downstairs, decked out in full dress uniform. Red braids draped his shoulders. Medals were lined up six deep over his left breast. He oozed dignity, a man of stature. I would have been impressed, except for the uncomfortable and peevish look he wore. A petulant child forced to wear his best clothes. I covered my mouth, but was unable to block my laughter.
"Enough. I have to wear this damn thing once a year, and as far as I'm concerned, it's one time too many."
Valak tugged at his collar. "Ready?" I joined him at the door. The uniform enhanced his athletic body, and my thoughts drifted to how magnificent he would look with his uniform puddled around his feet.
"You look stunning," I blurted. Mortified, I blushed as a rush of heat spread through my body. I must have swallowed more brandy than I'd realized.
"Really?" Valak glanced down at his uniform. Then he set his shoulders back and stopped yanking at his collar. His cross expression changed to a thoughtful smile.
"Yes, you do," I said.
We arrived in the commander's war room just as the generals assembled. The long, slender, stained-glass windows glowed with the weak light of the setting sun. Servants scurried around the circular chamber, lighting lanterns and arranging platters of food and drink. All military personnel were attired in their dress uniforms. Medals and buttons sparkled. I knew only three generals by sight. The rest I deduced by the color of the diamonds on their otherwise black uniforms. Scrutinizing their faces, I memorized their different features in case Valak tested me later. Brazel glared when I made eye contact. Advisor Mogkin stood next to him, and I shivered as Mogkin's eyes slid over me with cunning appraisal. When Brazel and Rayad had performed their experiments on me, Mogkin had always hovered nearby. His presence, sensed but unseen, had given me violent nightmares. Brazel's usual advisors were missing. I wondered why he had brought Mogkin instead. The commander sat at the tip of the egg-shaped conference table. His uniform was simple and elegant, with real diamonds stitched onto his collar. The generals, flanked by their advisors, seated themselves around the rest of the table. Valak's chair was to the commander's right, and my stool was placed behind them, against the only stone wall in the room. I knew the meeting would last all night, and I was glad I would be able to rest my back. Another advantage to my position was that I wasn't in direct sight of Brazel. Although I could avoid seeing the poisonous looks he might flash my way, I couldn't hide from Mogkin's pointed stares. The commander pounded a wooden gavel on the table. Silence fell.
"Before we launch into the scheduled topics," the commander said, indicating the detailed agenda which had been distributed earlier, "I have an important announcement. I have appointed a new successor."
A murmur rippled through the war room as the commander walked around the table and handed a sealed envelope to each general. Inside the envelopes were eight pieces to an encoded puzzle that would reveal the new successor's name when deciphered by Valak's key. Tension permeated the room. I felt it pressing against me like an overfilled water skin about to burst. A maelstrom of expressions, surprise, anger, concern, and contemplation crossed the generals' faces. General Rasmussen of MD-7 whispered into his advisor's ear, the general's cheeks turning as red as his hair and mustache. I leaned forward in my seat and saw Brazel struggle to keep his face neutral as delight tweaked at his features. Instead of erupting, the tension simmered and leaked away as the commander ignored it by beginning the meeting. Items related to MD-1 were the first order of business, to be followed by each district in order. As a bottle of General Kit Vivan's special white brandy slid around the table, the generals discussed snowcats and mining rights.
Come on, Kit. Enough about the cats. Just feed them up on the pack ice like we do, and they won't bother you,
General Chenzo of MD-2 said in exasperation, running a meaty hand through his moon-white hair. His full mane stood out starkly against his tanned skin.
Feed them so they'll get healthy and fat and start breeding like rabbits? We'll go broke supplying them meat, Kit Vivan shot back.
My interest in the proceedings waxed and waned depending on the subject. After a while, I began to feel lightheaded and warm as the brandy influenced my body, since protocol dictated that I swallow when tasting for the commander. The generals voted on various topics, but the commander held the final vote. Mostly, he ruled in favor of the majority. No one ventured a complaint when he didn't. Commander Ambrose had lived in MD-3, scratching out a meager existence with his family in the foothills of the Seoul Mountains. Nestled between the mountains and the ice pack, his home was atop a vast diamond mine. When the rich find had been discovered, the king had claimed the diamonds and allowed the commander's family to live there and work in the mines. He lost many family members to cave-ins and to the damp and dirty environment. As a young man seething at the injustices of the monarchy, Ambrose educated himself and began preaching about reform. His intelligence, bluntness, and pervasiveness gained him many loyal supporters. My mind focused back on the meeting when the generals reached issues regarding MD-5. General Brazel caused a considerable stir. Instead of sliding around his best brandy, he sent a silver tray containing what looked like small brown stones. Valak handed one to me. It was a round drop of Brazel's Criollo. Before protests about ignoring tradition could escalate, Brazel rose and invited everyone to take a bite. After a brief moment of silence, exclamations of delight filled the war room. The Criollo was filled with strawberry brandy. I gave the commander the all-clear sign so I could savor the rest of my morsel. The combination of the sweet, nutty taste of the Criollo, mixed with the smooth texture of the brandy, was divine. Rand would be upset that he hadn't thought of mixing the two, I supposed, then regretted feeling sorry for Rand as I envisioned his deceitful face. After the praise died down, Brazel made the announcement that the construction of his new factory was complete. Then he went on to more mundane matters of how much wool had been sheared and the expected output of the cotton plantations. Military District 5 produced and dyed all the thread for Ixia and then sent it to General Franis's MD-3 to be woven into fabric. Franis nodded his head in concern as he wrote down the figures Brazel quoted. He was the youngest of the generals and had the habit of tracing the purple diamonds on his uniform with a finger whenever he was concentrating. I dozed on my stool as fuzzy thoughts gathered like storm clouds in my mind. Strange dreams about brandy, border patrols, and permits swirled like snowflakes. Then the images turned bright and sharp as a picture of a young woman dressed in white hunting furs snapped into my mind. She held a bloody spear high in the air in celebration. A dead snow cat lay at her feet. She slammed the tip of her weapon into the pack ice and drew a knife. Cutting a slash in the cat's fur, she used a cup to collect the blood that spilled out. She exulted as she drank, scarlet rivulets spilling down her chin. I heard her thoughts clearly in my mind.
No one has managed this feat, she thought. No one but I, she shouted over the snow.
Her exhilaration filled my heart.
Proof that I am a strong, cunning hunter. Proof that my manhood was taken from me. Proof that I am a man. Men will not rule me any longer, she cried. Become the snow cat to live with snow cats. Become a man to live with men.
The hunter turned her face. At first, I took her to be the commander's sister. They shared the same thin, delicate features and black hair. She wore power and confidence like a cloak. Peering at my dreaming self, her gold, almond-shaped eyes drove through me like a lightning strike. Sudden recognition that she was the commander jerked me awake. My heart pounded and my head thumped, and I realized I was staring directly into Mogkin's searing gaze. He smiled with satisfaction. The commander's reason for hating magicians was as clear to me as glass. He was a she, but with the utter conviction that she should have been born a man. That cruel fate had chosen to burden him with a mutation that he had to overcome.
and the commander feared that a magician might pull this secret from his mind. Pure foolishness, I thought, shaking my head to dismiss the whole crazy notion. Just because I had dreamed about a woman didn't mean that the commander was one. It was absolute nonsense. Or was it? Rubbing my eyes, I glanced around to see if anyone else had noticed that I had fallen asleep. The commander stared off into the distance, and Valak sat stiff and alert, scanning the room, seeking something or someone. General Tesso had the floor. Valak pulled his gaze back to the commander and bumped his arm in alarm. "What's going on?" he whispered urgently. "Where were you?" "Just remembering a time long ago," the commander said in a wistful voice. "More enjoyable than listening to General Tesso's excruciatingly detailed report on the corn harvest in MD4. I studied the commander's features, trying to superimpose the woman from my dream. They matched, but that meant nothing. Dreams twisted reality, and it was easy to envision the commander killing a snowcat. The rest of the meeting continued without incident, and I dozed on my stool from time to time, untroubled by strange dreams. When the commander pounded his gavel, I was awake in an instant.
"Last item, gentlemen," the commander announced. "A Sishan delegation has requested a meeting."
The room erupted with voices. Arguments sprang to life as if the generals were picking up an old debate right where they had left off. They discussed trade treaties and quarreled about attacking Sitya. Instead of trading for goods, why not take them, they argued. They wanted to expand their districts and gain more men and resources, ceasing all worries about Sitya attempting to attack Ixia. The commander sat in silence and let the flow of advice wash over him. The generals settled enough to proclaim their beliefs about allowing the Sishans to come. The four northern generals, Kitvivan, Chenzo, Franus, and Dino, didn't want to meet with the delegation, while the four southern generals, Tesso, Rasmussen, Hazal, and Brazel, favored a summit with the Sishans. The commander shook his head.
"I acknowledge your opinions about Sitya, but the southerners would rather trade with us than attack us. We have more men and metal, a fact they are well aware of. To attack Sitya, we would expend many lives and large sums of money. And for what? Their luxury items aren't worth the cost. I'm content with Ixia. We have cured the land of the king's disease. Perhaps my successor will want more. You'll have to wait until then."
A murmur rippled through the generals. Brazel nodded in agreement, with his thin lips anchored in a predator's smile.
"I have already agreed to meet with the southern contingent," the commander continued. "They're due to arrive in 4 days. You have until then to express your specific concerns to me before departing for your home districts. Meeting adjourned."
The bang from the commander's gavel echoed throughout the dead silent room. The commander rose, and with his bodyguards and Valak close behind, he prepared to leave. Valak gestured for me to join them. I lurched to my feet. The full effect of the brandy I had consumed washed over me. Giddy, I followed the others from the room. An explosion of sound slipped through the door just before it closed behind us.
"That should stir things up a bit," the commander said with a wan smile.
"I would advise against vacationing in MD8 this year," Valak said sarcastically. "The way Dino reacted to your announcement about the southern delegation, I would expect him to pepper your beach house with sand spiders." Valak shivered. A horribly painful way to die. My skin crawled too, thinking of the lethal spiders the size of small dogs. Our procession continued in silence for a while as we headed back to the commander's suite. My gait was unsteady. The stone walls blurred past me, as if they were moving, and I was the one standing still. Outside the commander's suite, Valak said, "I'd watch out for Rasmussen, too. He didn't take the news of the change in your successor well." The commander opened his door. I stole a quick glance inside his suite. The same plain utilitarian style that decorated his office and the rest of the castle was present. What had I expected? Maybe a splash of color or something a bit more feminine? I gave my head a little shake to banish such absurd thoughts. The motion made my head spin, and I had to put a hand to the wall to keep myself from stumbling.
"I watch out for everyone, Valak. You know that," the commander said before shutting the door behind him.
Upon entering our suite, Valak stripped off his uniform jacket and threw it on the couch. He pointed to a chair and said,
"Sit. We need to talk."
I plopped into the chair and dangled a leg over the armrest, watching Valak pace the room in his sleeveless undershirt and form-fitting black pants. Imagining my hands helping to ease the tension in the long, ropey muscles of his arms almost started a giggling fit. Brandy flowed through my blood, quickening my pulse.
"Two things were very wrong tonight," Valak said.
"Oh, come on, I just dozed for a minute," I said in my defense. Valak shot me a quizzical look.
"No, no, you did fine. I meant about the meeting, the generals."
He continued to pace. First, Brazel seemed unusually happy about the change in successor and the Sishan delegation. He's always wanted a trade treaty, but he typically exercises a more cautious approach. And second, there was a magician in the room.
What?
My breath locked. Had I been discovered?
Magic. Very subtle, from a trained professional. I only felt it once, a brief touch, but I couldn't pinpoint the source. But the magician had to be in the room, or I wouldn't have felt it.
When?
During Tesso's long-winded dissertation about Korn.
Valak's posture had relaxed a little, as if the act of talking out a problem helped him deal with it.
About the same time your snoring could be heard halfway across the room.
Ha, I said rather loud. You were so stiff at that meeting I thought rigor mortis had set in. Valak snorted with amusement.
I doubt you could have looked any better sitting in that uncomfortable dress uniform all night. I imagine Delana sprayed on extra starch with malicious glee.
Then he grew serious again.
Do you know Advisor Mogkin? He eyed you most of the evening.
I know of him. He was Rayad's primary advisor. They also hunted together.
What's he like? Valak asked.
Same kind of vermin as Rayad and Nyx, I said. The words poured off my lips. I slapped both hands over my mouth, but it was too late. Valak studied me for a moment. Then he said,
There were a number of new advisors at the meeting. I guess I'll have to check them out one by one. It seems we have a new southern spy with magic abilities. He sighed. It never ends.
He dropped onto the edge of the couch as weariness settled on him like a coating of dust.
If it did, you'd be out of a job.
Before I could stop myself, I squeezed behind Valak and started to massage his shoulders. The alcohol had taken complete command of my movements, and the tiny sober section of my brain could do nothing but yell useless admonishments. Chapter 24. Valak stiffened under my touch. Was he expecting me to strangle him? I wondered. As my hands kneaded his muscles, he relaxed.
What would you do, I asked him, if suddenly the world was perfect and you had no one to spy on?
I'd be bored, Valak said with amusement.
Come on, seriously, a change in profession.
I dug my thumbs into the muscle at the base of his neck.
A fire dancer?
A rush of warmth radiated as brandy pumped through my blood.
No. An alms teacher, Valak suggested.
No, it's a perfect world, no weapons allowed. I moved my hands down his back. How about a scholar? You've read all these books lying around, haven't you? Or are they just to make it difficult for someone to sneak in?
Books serve me in so many ways, but I doubt your perfect society would need a scholar on murder.
My hands paused for a second.
No, definitely not.
A sculptor? I could carve extravagant statues. We could redecorate the castle and liven things up.
How about you? He asked as I pressed my fingertips into the small of his back. What would you do?
Acrobatics. The word flowed without conscious thought. I had thought I left acrobatics behind with my fire amulet, but it seemed my excursion through the trees had reawakened my desire.
An acrobat? Well, that explains a lot.
Aroused by my contact with Valak's sculpted body, I slid my hands around to his stomach.
Rayad be damned.
The brandy had relaxed me past fear. I started to unfasten Valak's pants. He grabbed my wrists, stopping me.
Yelena, you're drunk. His voice was hoarse.
Valak released my hands and stood. I sat, watching him with surprise as he swooped down to lift me from the couch. Wordless, he carried me to my room and laid me on the bed.
Get some sleep, Yelena, Valak said softly as he left the room.
My world spun as I stared into the darkness. Placing a hand on the cold stone wall next to my bed helped to steady my thoughts. Now I knew. Valak had no interest in me other than my job as the food taster. I had allowed myself to get caught up in Delana's gossip and Marin's jealousy. The ache of rejection throbbing in my soul was my own fault. Why hadn't I learned by now? People turned into monsters. At least the people in my experience. First Brazel, then Rand, although Rayad had stayed consistent. What about Valak? Would he transform into one, or had he already? I shouldn't be thinking of him at all, not as a companion, and not to fill the dead place in my heart. As if I could. I laughed, a drunken sound, tattered and ragged, the music of my thoughts.
Look around you, Yelena, I chided myself. The poisoned food taster who converses with ghosts. I should be thankful that I breathed, that I existed. I shouldn't long for more than freedom in Citya. Then I could fill the emptiness.
Dismissing all sentimental, weak thoughts, I focused on the business of staying alive. Escaping to Citya would break no bonds with Valak. Once I obtained the antidote to Butterfly's dust, I could set my plans into motion. Determined, I reviewed lockpicking techniques in my mind until I fell into a deep, alcohol-induced sleep. I woke an hour before dawn with a pounding head. My mouth felt like an abandoned spider web. I imagined dust blowing from my lips with each exhaled breath. Moving with extreme care, I inched out of bed. Wrapping my blanket around my shoulders, I went to get a drink. Valak liked cold water and always kept a pitcher outside on the balcony. The crisp night air blew away the lingering fuzziness of sleep. The castle's stone walls glowed, eerily reflecting the moonlight. I located the metal pitcher. A thin film of ice had formed on the top. Breaking it with a finger, I poured the water into my mouth, gulping. When I tipped my head back for a second drink, I noticed a black spider-shaped object clinging to the castle wall above my head. With growing alarm, I realized the shape was descending toward me. It wasn't a spider, but a person. I searched for a hiding spot, but stopped when I realized that the intruder had probably already seen me. Locking myself in the suite and waking Valak seemed a better plan. But before I could enter the pitch-black living room, I hesitated. Inside, the intruder's dark clothes would be hard to see. A locked door no longer gave me a sense of security since my lockpicking lessons with Jenko. Cursing myself for leaving my switchblade inside, I moved to the far end of the balcony, clutching the water pitcher in my hand. The wall climber jumped the remaining distance to the balcony floor. The effortless movement triggered recognition. Valak? I whispered. A bright flash of white teeth. Then Valak removed a pair of dark glasses. The rest of his face was hidden behind a hood that covered his head and was tucked into a skin-tight body leotard. What are you doing? I asked.
Reconnaissance. The generals tend to stay up late after the commander leaves the brandy meeting, so I had to wait until everyone had gone to bed.
Valak went into the suite. He removed his hood. Lighting the lantern on his desk, he pulled a paper from his pocket.
I hate a mystery. I would have let the identity of the commander's successor remain a secret, as I have for 15 years. But tonight's opportunity was too tempting. With 8 drunken generals sleeping it off, I could have danced on their beds without waking them. Not one among them has any imagination. I watched all the generals put their envelopes from the commander right into their briefcases.
Valak motioned for me to join him at the desk. Here, help me decipher this. He handed me a stiff piece of paper. A jumble of words and numbers were scrawled on it. He had copied the 8 different pieces of the encrypted message by stealing it to each general's room. I wondered why he was confiding in me. Too curious to question, I pulled up a chair to help him. How did you break the wax seal? I asked.
Rookie trick. All you need is a sharp knife and a tiny flame.
Now read me the first set of letters.
He wrote it down, then reordered the letters until he had created the word siege. Opening a book, he flipped through the pages. Symbols like the ones on my switchblade's handle peppered the document. The page Valak stopped on was decorated with a large blue symbol that resembled a star in the middle of three circles.
What's that? I asked.
The old battle symbol for siege. The dead king used these markings to communicate with his captains during times of war. They were originally created hundreds of years ago by a great strategist. Read me the next set. They should be numbers.
I told him the numbers. He began to count the lines of text.
It occurred to me that I could borrow this book and figure out Jenko's message on my switchblade. Eventually, my ass. Won't Jenko be surprised?
When Valak reached that number, he wrote a letter down on a clean page. After he had finished deciphering the message, Valak sat as still as a held breath.
Unable to wait any longer, I asked,
"Who is it?"
"Guess," he said. I looked at him. I was tired and hung over. "I'll give you a hint. Who is the happiest about the change? Whose name keeps popping up during the most bizarre situations?"
Terror swept over my body like a cloak. If something happened to the commander, Brazel would be in command.
I would probably be his first order of business, and wouldn't live long enough to see any changes he might implement in Ixia.
Valak understood the look on my face. He nodded. "Right. Brazel."
For 2 days, the commander met with each general in turn. My brief and periodic interruptions to taste the commander's food created uncomfortable moments of silence. The tension around the castle was palpable as the general's retinue snarled and fought with everyone. On the third day, when I arrived to taste the commander's breakfast, I found him absorbed in conversation with Brazel and advisor Mogkin. The commander's eyes were glazed, his voice a monotone.
"Get out of here," Brazel barked.
Mogkin pushed me into the throne room.
"Wait here until we summon you," he ordered.
I hesitated outside the door, uncertain if I should heed this unusual request. If it had come from Valak or the commander, I wouldn't have doubted, but being expected to follow Mogkin's orders rankled. My worries grew as I imagined Brazel attempting an assassination. I was about to search for Valak when he burst into the throne room, his expression hard as he hurried toward the commander's office.
"What are you doing out here?" Valak demanded. "Haven't you tasted his breakfast yet?"
"I was ordered to wait. He's with Brazel and Mogkin." Sudden fear crossed Valak's face. He pushed past me into the office. I followed. Mogkin was standing behind the commander with his fingertips pressing into the commander's temples. When Valak appeared, Mogkin stepped away. He said smoothly,
"You can definitely feel, sir, that this is an excellent way to ease a headache."
Animation returned to the commander's face.
"Thank you, Mogkin," he said. Glaring at Valak's intrusion, he demanded, "What's so important?"
"Disturbing news, sir."
Valak stared daggers at Brazel and Mogkin. "I would like to discuss it in private." The commander rescheduled their meeting for later that day, then dismissed them.
"Yelena, taste the commander's breakfast now."
"Yes, sir."
Valak watched me taste the food. An intense expression lined his face, making me nervous. Did he think the food was tainted? I rechecked the cooling tea and lukewarm omelet, but detected no foreign substances. I placed the tray on the commander's desk.
"Yelena, if I have to eat cold food again, I'll have you whipped. Understand?"
The commander's voice lacked passion, but the threat was genuine.
"Yes, sir," I replied, knowing an excuse was useless.
"You're dismissed."
I fled from the office, barely noticing the bustling activity in the throne room. Walking past the entrance, I paused.
"Hungry," said a flat voice in my head. My stomach growled. I was ravenous. I headed toward the kitchen.
When I rounded a corner, Advisor Mogkin stood there, blocking my path. He linked his arm through mine and guided me to an isolated section of the castle. Going with him seemed natural. I wanted to pull away. I wanted to be afraid, terrified even, but I couldn't produce the emotions. My hunger had dissipated. I felt content.
Mogkin steered me down a deserted corridor. A dead end, I thought, still unable to conjure a reaction. His silky gray eyes stared at me for a moment before he unhooked his arm from mine. His fingers traced the line of black diamonds down my uniform sleeve.
"My Yelena," he said possessively.
Fear blazed up my arm and exploded in my chest the second physical contact with Mogkin was broken. My emotional ennui had dissolved, but I couldn't move. The muscles in my body wouldn't obey my mind's frantic commands to fight. A magician. Mogkin had power. He had used it during the brandy meeting, tipping Valak off. But further contemplation on this revelation was cut short when Mogkin stepped closer.
"Had I guessed you had caused such trouble, I never would have brought you to Brazil's orphanage."
He smiled at my confusion.
"Didn't Rayad tell you that I found you?"
"No." My voice was husky.
"You were lost in the jungle, only 6 years old. Such a beautiful, bright child. Such a delight. I rescued you from the claws of a tree leopard because I knew you had potential. But you were too stubborn, too independent. The harder we tried, the more you resisted."
Mogkin cupped his hand under my chin, forcing me to meet his gaze.
"Even now, when I'm locked into you, you're still fighting me. I can command your body."
He raised his left arm, and my own left arm mirrored his movement.
"But if I tried to control both your mind and body, you would eventually thwart me."
He shook his head in disbelief, as if the whole concept amazed him.
"Fortunately, subtle pressure is all that's required."
He pulled his hand away, and then made a pinching gesture with his fingers and thumb. My throat closed. I was unable to breathe. Powerless to defend myself, I sank to the ground. My mind's screaming went unvoiced. Logic grabbed the panic and wrestled it to the ground. Mogkin was using magic. Maybe I could block it before I passed out. I tried reciting poisons in my mind.
"Such strength," Mogkin said in admiration. "But it won't save you this time."
He bent down and kissed me tenderly, almost fatherly, on the forehead. Peace flowed through me. I stopped resisting. My vision blurred. I felt Mogkin take my hand, holding it in his own.
Chapter 25. Reclining against the wall, I clung to Mogkin's hand as the world faded around me. I felt an unwelcome jolt, then the tight blockage in my throat released. Gasping for breath, I came to my senses and realized I was lying prone on the floor. Next to me sat Valak atop Mogkin's chest. Valak's hands were wrapped around Mogkin's neck, but his eyes were on me. Mogkin smiled when Valak stood and yanked him to his feet.
"I hope you're aware of the penalty for being a magician in Ixia," Valak said. "If not, I'd be delighted to enlighten you."
Mogkin smoothed out his uniform and adjusted his long, dark braid of hair.
"Some would say your ability to resist magic makes you a magician, Valak."
"The commander thinks otherwise. You're under arrest."
"Then you're in for a big surprise. I suggest you discuss these false accusations with the commander before you do anything drastic," Mogkin said.
"How about I kill you right now?"
Valak stepped closer to him. A hot, searing pain stabbed my abdomen. I yelped and rolled into a tight ball. The agony was relentless. Valak took another step. I screamed as fire blazed up my back and circled my head.
"Any closer and she'll be a corpse," Mogkin said, a cunning sleekness in his voice.
Through eyes tearing with anguish, I saw Valak lift his weight to the balls of his feet, but he remained in place.
"Well now, that's interesting. The old Valak really wouldn't have cared if I killed his food taster. Yelena, my child, I just realized how incredibly useful you are."
The intense pain was unbearable. I would have gladly died to escape from it. Before I passed out,
My last glimpse was of Mogkin's back as he walked away unharmed. I woke to blackness. Something heavy pressed against my forehead. Alarmed, I tried to sit up. "It's all right," Valak said, pushing me down. I touched my head and pulled off a damp cloth. Blinking in the light, I looked around at the familiar furniture of my own room. Valak stood next to me, a cup in his hand. "Drink this." I took a sip and cringed at the medicinal flavor. Valak insisted I finish it. When the cup was empty, he placed it on the night table. "Rest," he ordered, then turned to leave. "Valak," I said, stopping him, "why didn't you kill Mogkin?" He considered for a moment, tilting his head. "A tactical maneuver. Mogkin would have killed you before I could finish him. You're the key to too many puzzles. I need you." He strode to the door but paused at the threshold. His grip on the doorknob was hard enough to whiten his knuckles. "I've reported Mogkin to the commander, but he was..." Valak's hand twisted on the knob, and I heard the metal crack. "Unconcerned. So I'll be guarding the commander until Brazel and Mog can leave. I've reassigned Ari and Jenko as your personal bodyguards. Don't leave this suite without them. And stop eating Criollo. I'll taste the commander's Criollo. I want to see if anything happens to you." Valak pulled the door shut, leaving me alone with my swirling thoughts.